Welcome to the Expat Cast. This is the podcast where expats share their stories about fitting in, standing out, and all of the mishaps on the journey to finding home abroad. I'm your host, Nicole. It is the Expat Cast : Tereré Talks. Tereré Talks. I never know, should I go for the Spanish R and fail or just stick with the American one? I don't know. Anyway, I'm Nicole. I am from the US originally. I moved to Germany a while back, and now I am in Paraguay for a couple years on my partner's job contract, and I got annoyed that no one knows anything about this amazing country, so I decided to fix it.
And I'm Zoe. I am also originally from the US. I'm Nicole's childhood best friend. I lived abroad for a few years, but eventually settled in back in Philadelphia in the US, and I have visited Paraguay twice. So by most people's standards, that makes me an expert.
Between me mostly hiding out in my house for a year, you visiting twice, I can think of no two people more qualified, especially for today's episode, which is all about what is Paraguay and what is Asunción. I was kind of giggling to myself preparing for this one because I was like, well, I don't know if I'm the one to be doing this, but no one else is. So here we are.
If you're interested after listening to this, maybe do your own research about Paraguay.
I will say a lot of the things that I'm going to share, I heard for the first time on our free walking tour of Asunción that we did when you visited the first time.
Yes, absolutely. And I do want to present the fact that we're not making things up.
No.
I feel like you can rely on our information, but most of the information that is provided online about Paraguay is in Spanish. So for English speakers who don't speak any Spanish, it is quite hard to learn about this country.
But that's one of the many things that it's special about Paraguay. It's a landlocked island. We'll put it that way.
It's mysterious.
I accidentally transitioned us really well to the first thing to establish, which is the geography.
That's so true.
There are two landlocked countries in South America. Do you know what they are?
Oh, God. As you were saying that, I was like, you're going to ask me what the other one is.
Should I give you a hint, which is that yeah. It's the two places we went to when you came and visited?
Oh, obviously, Bolivia.
Yeah.
Because there was a war. It used to be have a coastline, and there was a war, and Chile took over the coastline.
Exactly.
So they blocked them from the ocean. Ugh, yeah. I know all of this.
You know it. But see, when I was learning about Paraguay, I'd read or heard, you know, it's the only landlocked country. And then I looked at the map and was like, but it's not? But Bolivia? And this is exactly it. So Bolivia lost its access to the coast. So now Bolivia and Paraguay are the only two. But yeah. It's landlocked, which I think is especially funny because I will probably say this every episode. Paraguay is actually not Uruguay. And Uruguay is on the coast.
It's the most common mistake.
So, okay, it's landlocked. It's in South America. There we go. There's already two pieces of geographical information. And so Brazil covers most of the northern and part of the eastern border. The eastern and southern border is Argentina. Another fun fact about Paraguay not being Uruguay is also they don't even touch.
I did used to think they were next to each other.
Yeah.
But they do have a large part of Argentina between them.
And then on the west, Bolivia.
There are 6.1 million people in the country. 2.3 million are in the Asunción area. Asunción is the capital of Paraguay and where Nicole is living. Within Asunción proper, there are only 540,000 people. There's a lot of space, just empty space between towns. Although on our recent trip, we did take a little road trip and there were a lot more population between kind of larger towns than I had previously expected.
So the first road trip I'd gone on in Paraguay was to this area in the north called the Chaco. And you go up the Trans-Chaco Highway, which only got built in the 50s, 60s. Ain't nothing there. I thought that was more representative than I think it actually is. When we went to this area called Laguna Blanca, we passed a lot of little towns. So there is and have been and were a lot of indigenous populations here. The main umbrella one is Guarani. Guarani is also a language. It's actually the name of the currency here. You pay in Guaranis. And Guarani is not only Paraguay, it's also parts of Brazil, I think even parts of Bolivia.
Yeah, and that language is really present still in the culture today.
But it is one of the two official languages.
From what I understand, the majority of people in Paraguay are bilingual and speak Spanish and Guarani.
Yeah. If you ask someone, what is the word for this in Spanish? They might tell you the word in Guarani, because for them, you would never call it by its Spanish name. You would always call it by its Guarani name. And there's also an official term for the mixture of the two, which is, I think it's called Yopara, that also is its own thing. So it's very, very present.
Yeah, you see it on signs all the time.
And in terms of notable places, so Asunción, as Zoe said, is the capital, and it lays on the Paraguay River, and across the river is Argentina. And it was founded in 1537 by the Spanish. Another place of note is towards the south along the Argentinian border as well, Encarnacion. That had its main heyday because when the Jesuits were here, that was a really active area. And now the Jesuit structures are in ruins, and they're actually the only UNESCO World Heritage Site in Paraguay. People visiting or traveling, if they've been to Paraguay at all, it might be for the waterfall, the Iguazu Falls. So you've actually been there and I haven't.
Yeah, I have been to Iguazu Falls when I was in Argentina. The falls happen right at the point where Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay meet. They're like these massive, massive waterfalls. I know a lot of people, when they think like large waterfalls, especially in North America, they're thinking of Niagara Falls. I don't know the numbers of like gallons of water going over each of these falls, but I have been to both, and Iguazu felt bigger.
Wow.
To me, for sure. Most people who go visit them look at them from the Argentinian side and then also the Brazilian side. The only time that they mentioned Paraguay while I was there was that there's like certain places that you can stand and you can see into all three countries. But yeah, this didn't make me more likely to go to Paraguay.
In terms of like the falls themselves, I mean, there is just like the two sides to view them. But Ciudad del Este is like the big city in the area, and that is in Paraguay. And that's pretty cheap to stay. I think some people opt to like stay there and then go to the falls, and then they're in the other countries. There's also a dam, which we'll talk about later, that's in that area. And then a lot of like Brazilians and Paraguayans know Ciudad del Este because it's right on the barrier of Brazil and Paraguay. And apparently it is a mecca for shopping, and a lot of Brazilians will come there because things are cheaper. I don't know. The last place of note is the Chaco, which is what I mentioned. We went on a road trip up there. It's in the north, right near the Bolivian border. It's sort of a green desert, and it is one of the most fascinating places I've been to in my life. I can and will talk about it for a long time in another episode, but it is populated by a lot of German-speaking Mennonites.
Kind of living alongside a lot of indigenous communities, which is a really interesting combination.
Okay, I'm going to run us through a lot of history highlight.
It's like we're doing our own little walk, free walking tour in order to get oriented in the city.
Exactly. Paraguay was, of course, conquered by the Spanish. So the Spanish conquerors came in 1524. And Asunción was a pretty big deal for them at the time because it was a very central point for planning and for transit. So I remember on the free walking tour, the guy being like, you can stand right here in this building, and like, this is where Lima was founded. This is where Buenos Aires was founded. And what he meant is like from this point. And so a lot of wider development branched out from plans that were made in Asunción. Allegedly, the local population had a pretty warm reaction to the Spanish. And the claim is that the Spanish looked a lot like what the gods were supposed to look like. So they were pretty friendly towards them. And the populations mixed. And that was through a mixture of like sometimes people sort of naturally chose to be together and had children. And other times there was certain rules that the populations mixed.
Yeah, the tour guide had a very clear bias at this part of the tour in talking about his pride in the fact that the country was very mixed, and that most people kind of looked the same because indigenous populations had been like integrated and mixed in. And I just felt like he was not open to a larger conversation.
His claim was sort of basically like, there isn't much in the way of discrimination based on skin color because historically populations mixed. And so there's not this like strong divide of like this population looks this way and this population looks the other way. This viewpoint that the skin color is not going to be the deciding factor on how someone's treated, I have heard from a couple different people, and I think it's interesting, and I don't really have anything more concrete to say than that at the moment.
Specifically because we also discussed that there is discrimination against indigenous mm-hmm. populations that are less mixed, shall we say.
For now, we'll move on. It's a very Christian country. So the Jesuit missionaries were in Paraguay for about 150 years. And that legacy definitely lives on. It's very, very Christian. And they gained independence from Spain in 1811. And since then, there's been a lot of different authoritarian rulers. And I believe two official dictators, one pretty early on and one more recently. So there's also a couple wars of note. So people familiar with South American history might know of the Triple Alliance War in Paraguay. They also call it the Paraguayan War. That was from 1864 to 1870. And it was Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay created an alliance that sort of left Paraguay as the odd man out. Suffice it to say, it did not go well for Paraguay, and they lost in battle repeatedly but refused to surrender. That's something that I've definitely noticed. There's a lot of local pride in this cultural belief of, like, we don't give up. They lost like 25 to 33% of their land, and the population at the time of Paraguay was anywhere from like 450 to 900,000 people. And only 220,000 of those survived. And out of those 220,000, only 28,000 were adult males. So like up to 90% of the male population was completely gone. And there's devastating stories about how they were sending children to fight. It's really heavy, really gripping, and definitely a topic to read more about if someone's interested. And another thing that was interesting, they mentioned a lot of their national archives were taken by Brazil and are still there and still classified. So it's not very easy to study a lot of Paraguayan history, not just because we're English speakers who are learning but not great at Spanish, but also for local populations, it's hard to be able to look into those times when they don't have the records. One thing that is related to this war that actually does connect Paraguay and Uruguay is both countries sort of exist as buffer countries between Brazil and Argentina. So yeah, that's the Paraguayan War. The other war of note is the Chaco War from 1932 to 1935, and that was against Bolivia. The topic was oil. There was allegedly oil in the Chaco area, and then both countries wanted to have a claim to it. The dictator that I mentioned that was more recent was Alfredo Stroessner, and he was active for 35 years from 1954 to 1989. So it's a long time. Also, I find his name super interesting, Alfredo Stroessner. I think Alfredo could be a Spanish name, could be an Italian name. There is also a huge Italian population here. And then Stroessner it's a German name. There's a ton of German migration. Even the dictator had German ancestry. He was ousted by a military coup. During that time, of course, there were just tons of human rights abuses. A lot of things having to do with the dictatorship are still very, very controversial. Like, for instance, the old town in Asunción was much more thriving back then. There were definitely improvements made to the city and to the country, but at a huge cost. Yeah, I think this is true of basically any South American country. It's a heavy and difficult conversation to talk about their experience with dictators, and Paraguay is no exception.
Yeah, I was really surprised on our tour to hear how many people still look fondly back on that time and really respect that dictatorship and think that things were better then than they are now.
Speaking of leadership and politics, there were votes for president in 2023 in the summer. So like right after I moved here, one random fun fact is that instead of having like campaign signs and banners or in addition to them, people just like paint walls. They do kind of like murals basically with like the campaign slogan and the name of the candidates. So that was really cool and interesting to see. The last couple points just have to do with migration. So as mentioned, there's a ton of German history here. So I think as soon as you say German history in South America, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, the Nazis fleeing. And that is true, that did happen. But there were also Nazis before World War II. So there's a population of people either actively in the Nazi Party or in support of them. And they left Germany to create basically a new Germany. I think that happened in various countries in South America, but definitely also in Paraguay. But it's not all Nazis. So there's also, just as said, the huge Mennonite population, mostly in the north. And the most recent wave of immigration were the so-called Impfgegner. So that is German for like anti vaxxers. So during the COVID pandemic, a lot of Germans came to Paraguay. Between all of these big waves of German migration, there's also, of course, plenty of just unrelated migration. There is a huge German presence in Paraguay. But there's also a lot of other big, strong presences. So for instance, Japan, there's like a whole town in the middle of nowhere in Paraguay that's like little Japan. There's a lot of US migration, a lot of Ukrainian migration, and a lot of Taiwanese migration, also a lot of Korean. And their laws generally for migration are very open, very loose. It's also a bit of a tax haven, so that also attracts a lot of people. Whew. And that is the end of my facts.
I guess now we can kind of talk about the city of Asunción and first impressions that you had when you got there.
Yeah, so I also was so surprised and confused that when I would look up Asunción before I moved, I was like not getting much of a sense of anything. And now that I'm here, I'm like, no, that tracks. That makes sense. So one thing is, when I got off of the airplane and I was like driving towards my house for the first time, the skyline was so broad. The skyline is a lot of housing that spans the wider area. It's not necessarily like that this is all a downtown, but it just looks huge.
Yeah, I thought this was really strange as well. I'm really used to US cities where there's like downtown has the sky rises. They're like clustered together, maybe over like a couple different neighborhoods, but generally like in the center, there's high rises. And then as you get further away from the center, the housing gets shorter and shorter, or just the buildings in general. There's like lots of clusters really far away from each other. And in between those clusters of high rises, it's single family homes, townhomes are connected in some way, but residential neighborhoods. And then there'll be like another cluster of high rises.
You don't have the typical structure of a city. Like you don't have an old town, which is the downtown, which is where the high rises are, which is where colonial buildings are, which is where you can walk around. It's not really like that. So there is a historic downtown, but not a lot of people live there. So like a lot of people work there. Monday to Friday, you could go there and see action. But on the weekends, it sometimes looks completely abandoned. But at the same time, that center still exists. Like it's right on the river. There are a lot of like, you know, famous restaurants there. That's where our free walking tour was. There's government buildings, historic buildings. But again, it's just like sometimes you just feel like completely alone there. And where there's more people is in the new town center. So if you get in your car and drive like 10, 15 minutes east and more inland, you hit these two shopping malls, Shopping del Sol and Paseo Galleria, and those constitute the new town center. And I did not have it on my bingo card to like start talking about shopping malls as a point of interest. You know, I thought we left that behind in like the 90s, early 2000s, and I was not ready for it. But it's totally true. Like there's these two giant shopping malls. You can walk within each individual shopping mall, and technically, like they're right across from each other. You technically could walk to the other one, but there's like a crazy, crazy three lanes in each direction street between them. So it's not like a walking area. But then in the wider area surrounding those two malls are like smaller malls and cafes and food parks.
Yeah, it's not very walkable. So I was in Asunción for around 10 days in June, and I went to the mall. It was one of the things that I did. I don't remember exactly why I was there, but I did walk there from a restaurant or a cafe that we had been at, and I don't know why I separated from you, and I walked to the mall. And I was on the side of a big road. Like, it was not very pedestrian friendly. After the mall, I walked to a cemetery, and that was through nicer streets and things like that. But it's a very strange place. It doesn't really feel like you are in the center of a city or like a downtown. It's not very conducive to like tourism.
But most things that you find out about, oh, this cool restaurant, oh, an event, are in those neighborhoods surrounding it. And meanwhile, as said, when you go downtown, you know, last time you were here, so your more recent visit was in February 2024, and we tried to go to the train museum downtown on like a Monday or Tuesday afternoon, like a very normal day. They were officially open online. And first off, like, very few people around. Second off, the museum was closed and looked very closed, we'll say. And then when we walked from there to this rooftop bar, there were some people, but it wasn't like, oh, cool, we're in downtown.
Yeah, and that was the old city, and it's pretty abandoned.
To wrap it all up, it is a first impression, because of course when you get somewhere, you want to get oriented, you want to figure out where you are. And I think that's one thing that's very difficult to do in Asuncion. But I will say, like, for the old town downtown, I think it has a lot that is great. Like, there's this river. They made like a riverfront walk with like a bike path and running path, walking path. It's lit at night. There's like a park on the side of it where people play different sports or have like barbecues. They actually just built a bridge to Argentina. So I know I said on the other side of the river is Argentina, but actually you used to have to go kind of far to get there. And since I got here, they were building this giant bridge, which they just opened March 2024. There's a lot of cool stuff. Like, they're doing good projects. And in the old town, you have different squares and parks and like some older buildings. And like, I just feel like if there was more money invested there, if there was more money to be invested in the old town, it could absolutely have another era. But at the moment, it's sort of an in-between. Like, there's not nothing there, but I don't end up with many reasons to go there.
A lot of the buildings are abandoned, not just like abandoned with no people in it, but there is no one actively living or working in that building. It's really beautiful. It's great for photography. But it is a little strange to walk around on the weekend there.
I guess also, like, in terms of first impressions, so I remember like getting into the house and like getting to know the neighborhood. It was on a cobblestone road that was so beautiful. And all of these trees, the picture of a cobblestone street with the trees is really beautiful. However, I used to live in Charleston in South Carolina in the US, and they have a bunch of cobblestone streets that are maintained for historical reasons. And in Philadelphia's old town, where we're from, like, same. Or even Germany, like, with, you know, Europe has a ton of cobblestone streets, but they're done in a very modern way. This is much more like, it's like dirt roads, and then they place stones on it. So there's a lot of like sinkholes. The stones might shift during rains. Like, the streets are not in a very good condition. So cobblestone isn't this like romantic concept that you might have in your head. It's more like very rudimentary. But I think it still looks really great.
Yeah, it's still got like a cool vibe, even though it is tough to drive on the streets. And as we said, it's not a super pedestrian friendly city, especially when you're not in the old town. So you are driving.
It is car centered. Like, the streets are made for cars. The lifestyle is made for cars. You can walk in certain areas and you can bike. Like, my partner bikes to work every day. I bike to Spanish class. Like, we bike actually a decent amount, but I wouldn't say that's the norm. There are more and more bike lanes. When we were traveling in December and January, the person that came to cat sit for us, he biked the whole time. Everywhere he needed to go, he found like a really great group of people that are also advocating for bike lanes and bike infrastructure. So there is a culture of it, and you can do a lot by bike, but I won't pretend that it's, you know, the most normal or even the safest. We'll talk about that in the future as well, as we talk about transit. In terms of daily life, in terms of like the hours of the day, I would say a lot of people wake up pretty early, like 6:30. That's definitely common for like construction workers and people who work outdoors, but I think even people with indoor jobs wake up pretty early. I think that has a lot to do with the heat, because there is definitely a siesta culture here. And again, that is absolutely the heat. Like, it's very hard to concentrate or do anything between the hours of like 1 and 3. So they structure the day around it. Dinner time is pretty late. Like, if you go to dinner at 8, restaurants are just opening up.
And speaking of the heat, it is a subtropical climate. So it's really, really hot and really humid in the summer, which is European winter. So like December, January, it's so hot. And in the winter, it's still warm. I've been there in both seasons now. And the winter I was still hot. Normal is in the 30s.
It's like 3 weeks a year where you can put any kind of long sleeve layer on, and that's about it. Well, speaking of clothes, another thing that really stood out to me, I mean, again, especially moving from Germany, is that people actually, like, they dress up. Like, people have a sense of style, a sense of fashion, and if you're going even just to dinner, you can tell, like, it's not what they were wearing all day. Like, they're wearing a nicer outfit.
Although I have to say that all of the men were just in jeans and a white t-shirt.
That's right. I think I'm definitely thinking more of the women and how women dress.
Yeah. As in most cultures, women exactly. are more fashion conscious than the men.
Yeah. Oh, I do have a couple more facts. The electricity I learned is actually green electricity because it is powered by the Itaipu Dam, which is like on the border between Brazil and Paraguay. This is also towards like Ciudad del Este and the falls. They established it in 1984. It produced more electricity than any dam in the world until 2020, and now it's the second most. And it's the third largest hydroelectric dam. So it actually produces more power than Paraguay needs. So the rest goes to Brazil because it's sort of a cooperation. I'm so interested in this dam. I really, really want to go visit it. And you can do tours. I don't think I knew that Paraguay has like among the most green electricity in the world.
But the regular water is not drinkable water.
No, that's true.
You do have to buy water from jugs. This was very exciting to me. There are these men that drive down the street and they have these very specific whistles. And when you hear the sound of the water whistle, then you go outside and you can buy jugs, give them back your old plastic water jugs, and they refill them with new water and, you know, sell them again. And that's how you get drinking water. I love all of the people. This is another kind of daily life thing. All of the people that drive down your street to sell you specific things that you need.
Do you remember? So you were actually here the day we moved. Do you remember when we left that old apartment for the last time and we saw this man selling fish?
Yes.
That was wild.
That was so wild because we were just talking about how, like, seafood, I wouldn't really eat it in Paraguay because it is a landlocked country. And then we just see this man with just like fish on.
Yeah, he just straight up had like massive fish hanging from a line on a stick. How would you call this? Like a
yoke?
I never would have come up with that word. I love that. Oh. On a yoke?
Yeah, a yoke is like when it goes over your shoulder, like a stick that kind of goes over your shoulders and things hang from both sides.
Yeah, it was that. It was amazing. That is not normal. Usually, like, the daily people, it's like, yeah, the water guys, people who sell chipa, which is like a special Paraguayan food, people who sell ice or ice cream. You'll like randomly see the fish guy or you'll randomly see just someone selling brooms. I've gotten a knock on the door from an exterminator a couple times. Like, it's just, you just never know.
And I think another important thing to bring up is that there is no mail system. This is still wild to me. I don't really understand how it works. You just don't get mail unless somebody has paid a specific person to just come to your house to give you something.
Yep. I have an amazing story about that I'm going to save for our next episode. The last point I just want to bring up before we start to wrap up is the economic situation. Generally, Paraguay is not a very rich country. So like minimum wage is about $370 a month, US dollars. And there's just a big economic gap. Like on the street I'm living right now, I live in, they call it a duplex. So it's like connected to the house next to it. 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms with a little yard. Across the street and next to me are 2 like next level, like they're at least twice the size of my house. And next to them on one side is kind of more of like a shack. I think they have a couple of rooms, but it's like a single standalone building and it's kind of a little bit more run down. And it's a mixture of like a workshop for the people who live there. Like they run a business with wood and with steel. So they also do that out of their home. So it's like a mixture, but still it's like, it's just not a very well-kept house. And then on the other side of the mansion is a house of a similar size, but it's very well-kept. And this is really common. Like you just have streets where you can see any range of economic situations. And especially when you leave the neighborhoods where a lot of foreigners or like richer people are living, you can see that, yeah, there's not a huge industry that's like powering the Paraguayan economy.
Paraguay's biggest export is sugar cane and beef.
One thing that I want to mention is safety. It is very, very safe in Paraguay, I would say, especially compared to a lot of other South American countries and specifically South American capitals. Both neighborhoods I've lived in are definitely more middle to higher income, but like I'm not only speaking from my personal experience. By and large, it's quite safe and it's quite stable here. You know, as much as I just shared about the history and I said there was a dictator until the late 80s and all this, it's very impressive to me how much stability they have politically in Paraguay. Daily life is stable and daily life is quite safe. Another question I wanted to touch on is the mentality and like also how people react to me as a foreigner and other foreigners. I have so much to say about this that I want the people of Paraguay to be an entire episode unto itself. But I want to say off the bat how great the people are. The people are so great.
They're so nice.
They're fun. They're relaxed. They're friendly. I have never experienced a place that's more welcoming of foreigners. People are pretty non-judgmental about most things, but including you being from somewhere else, you looking different, you speaking another language.
I've been there for, I would say, a total of a month, maybe a little bit more than a month over the two stays. I would say maybe only like once or twice people even asked me, you know, like, where are you from? Generally, people just are kind of nonchalant about it. They're like super friendly. If you're having a larger conversation with them, they'll ask you questions about yourself. But if you're just like trying to order something, they don't really bat an eye. They're just like used to lots of different types of people and not thinking about foreigners as something of extreme note.
That's a good way of putting it. The last question from you guys was about the cost of living. And actually, I'm going to save that for the next episode because the topic of the next episode is going to be living. Houses, homes, moving houses. So more on that later. And now we're going to wrap it up the way that we always do. I say in our second episode with a capybara joke. So Zoe and I spent hours on a canoe in a river that is a runoff of the Amazon in northern Bolivia, making every possible joke you could make that is a pun on the word capybara. And to wrap up every episode, we're each going to share one. I'm ready. Should I go first?
Yeah, you should go first.
Okay. What does a capybara who lives in Boston and have a child call their child?
What?
A capydaughter.
That's so bad. That makes me feel a lot better about mine because I was about to start mine with a caveat that it's really bad.
Well, no need. I warmed us all up for that.
Oh, perfect. So I've got a two-parter here.
Ooh.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
What do you call a capybara who insists he's really good at navigating?
What?
A mappybara. And what does his friend say when it turns out he's not very good at navigating?
Oh no, what does he say?
This is capybara.
Amazing. Well done. Well done.
You set the bar low. Thank you for that.
I did. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for sharing about Asunción and Paraguay with me today. And yeah, we'll be back in a week to talk about homes.
See you then.
Hasta luego.